on this new endeavor that I have, this new podcast that I'm calling the Guadalajara Geopolitics Institute. And together with students, we talk to real experts such as yourself, serious people to truly understand the world, and something that's often lacking in our textbooks here in institutions. And students are on summer break, so they follow the podcast and they join me to interview people like yourself during the semester. So you're a risk consultant and best-selling author of books. Well, it's a long list, from Century of War, I believe, is your first book, until Target China is your latest, correct?
Latest in English. It's not my latest book, but there are two subsequent books that have been published in German and other languages.
Okay, and what did they touch on? Which topics?
The one which is about to come out in English is called The Lost Hegemon, Whom the Gods Would Destroy is the subtitle. Mm-hmm. And it's about the attempt by certain oligarchs in the United States, very rich people who think they own the world, to use radical Islam, or to create radical Islam through the war in Iraq, through the war in Syria, through many, 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 many wars, to advance a geopolitical agenda of controlling the world oil, and so forth, and harming China, harming Russia, the two most serious opponents of a single world order that George Bush spoke about in 1991 after the collapse of the Soviet Union.
And would that be similar to the books by Robert Dreyfus, Devil's Game?
Not really. I know Robert Dreyfus's book quite well. I quoted a couple of chapters, but it's rather quite different. It goes into the history of British and then later American intelligence attempts to use radical Islam going back to the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And I spend quite a bit of time going into the creation of the Muslim Brotherhood in 1926 by Hassan Banna in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And in effect, using his words, he created a death cult where to die for Allah, killing infidels, meaning Christians or Shia Muslims or Sufi or whatever, is the greatest glory, and that's the purpose of life, is to die. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of an unhealthy ideology, in my view. Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't wait till that book comes out. The topic I guess I wanted to talk about today was, one of the gravest threats, which would be the tension that the U.S. is fomenting with Russia, which are ever escalating. And let's just start with yesterday's statement. I'm not sure if you had time to hear it, by German politician Oscar Lafontaine.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I read that.
Basically, he based his comment, I believe, on George Kennan's last words, one of the Cold War architects, who stated in the 90s that what happened to U.S. foreign policy in the 90s towards Russia is basically utter madness, and he can't believe, you know, his whole life's work was thrown out the window. LaFontaine basically served Victoria Nuland's words back to her, right, telling U.S. imperialism to buzz off. In other words, what are your thoughts on
that? He said it more forcefully.
Yeah.
But Victoria Nuland said it more vulgar also. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on his statement?
Well, LaFontaine, unfortunately, LaFontaine today doesn't represent the mainstream of vocal German political figures, but he is a very important voice. His wife, Wagenknecht, is the number two in the Der Linke party, which LaFontaine has stepped back from, and perhaps to let her take a more leading role. And she has made very, very actual, real, and powerful critique of the NATO policy against Russia. So I think LaFontaine is quite right that the American agenda is to create as much chaos in the world, and especially to try to destroy Russia, because Russia is the only power. China is absolutely essential to the future of Russia, but Russia today is the only nuclear power with the capability and the will to confront the U.S. in a mutual assured destruction scenario. And that is the only thing that would stop these madmen. Most of these neoconservatives in Washington, they never donned a military uniform. They never had to kill somebody for saving their life, own life, or whatever in battle. They're a bunch of armchair academics like Paul Wolfowitz from Johns Hopkins School for International Studies, or Richard Perle, and so forth. And in essence, as I document in a book that just came out in German called The Think Tanks, Die Denkfabriken, the neocon think tanks are nothing but hired guns of the military-industrial complex of the United States. McDonnell Douglas, Lockheed, Boeing, and so forth and so forth, Raytheon. And they are the propagandists that get Congress all agitated about the big bad Russian bear, so that the defense budgets can be increased and more wars made around the world. Mm-hmm. I, for one, think this is a very bad way for my native land to go. I think America has a much better role potentially to play in the world than being the killer of all hopes.
And you mentioned Russia definitely isn't afraid to defend themselves, and it's fascinating to listen to Putin's speeches. You know, going back a year or two, not very many diplomats have the intellect to sit, you know, for 3 hours and answer questions. And he said, you know, Russia doesn't want to war, but they are ready to defend themselves, just like anyone would, right?
Well, that's it. That's the point, exactly.
Right.
That if somebody comes at you and has the intent to kill you, and you have the intent to live, you must defend your life with all means necessary, including potentially killing that aggressor. And that is the determination that the Russians have shown. They showed it in the Second World War at the cost of 27 or more million lives in the Soviet Union, something that the U.S. today tries to ignore or deny. But I was in St. Petersburg 10 days ago. I was invited to be a panelist at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. And I had the chance in that context to witness up close, from a distance of maybe 30 feet, President Putin speaking to an audience of 10,000 guests, paid guests from all around the world. Russia is by no means isolated, as the U.S. had hoped. They are by no means cowering in the corner out of fear and so forth. They're a proud people, and they have come closer together, each other, in this crisis. This crisis has made Putin a world-class leader. Before that, he was, you know, a KGB tough guy, but not a world-class leader. This circumstance of this crisis and his appreciation that it's life or death for Russia, and that it's a conflict that goes back at least 1,000 years to the split between the Roman Church and the Orthodox Church in the East, this gives the whole developments between Russia and China, Russia, China, and the BRICS countries, including Brazil, South Africa, India, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization countries, the Eurasian Economic Union, which Russia is the leading country in, with Belarus and Kazakhstan, Armenia and Kyrgyzstan, there is a new birth coming, the birth of a new Russia, but not only a new Russia, a potential new world, not a new world order, but a new world ordering, as I call it, stacking the whole structure in a different way that it can benefit mankind and not destroy mankind, which is, after all, the agenda of Rockefeller, George Soros, Bill Gates, and so forth, these American oligarchs. The agenda is eugenics, and you can study this, you can research it if you have any question that I'm exaggerating. go into the subject eugenics, Rockefeller, Gates, Soros, and you will find horrific things. They want to kill off billions of people as useless eaters and create a sterile world that something the Dark Ages of the medieval time could never even imagine.
And we did an interview with you a few years ago with one of my classes, and I would refer anyone listening to check out that interview, which will be posted, where you talked about the politics of GMOs, which is in your book, The Seeds of Destruction, and basically how it's strategic weapon of the U.S. government, and you describe how it's considered part of their national security. And you mentioned
national security, not really national security. It's the Monsanto Rockefeller cabal that wants to use control of food to kill off hundreds of millions of people.
And you mentioned in your latest article, which you posted, discussing what you learned in St. Petersburg, how the Russian government is refusing to use GMOs in Russia.
Yes, I was very, very happy to hear this. I had read conflicting reports on this. A law was passed and signed by President Putin 5 or 6 months ago, but it comes into effect in 2017. And I had the occasion to sit next to the deputy agriculture minister, and I asked him about this. And I said, why wait so long? He said, no, there are no GMOs allowed as of this time at all in Russia, only some seeds for laboratory experiments and nothing more. And we have decided Russia's beautiful soils, the organic rich soils that haven't been destroyed by chemicals like the soils of the United States or most of Western Europe after World War II, the so-called productivity yield increase program, that we can use that as a strategic advantage to produce quality nutrients called food and not fake foods like Monsanto produces.
And that's good news for everyone in the world. And going back to the talk with Putin, I actually listened to it this morning between Charlie Rose and Putin.
Yes.
And I actually saw you in the crowd because would go from time to time in the crowd. And I was just wondering, I found it amusing because, and a little bit disturbing because we know that Charlie Rose, he's part of the Western elite. It's on a record. He's attended Bilderberg. So he has this completely Western, anti-Russian perspective. Yes. And you can notice in the questions that he was posing to Putin, positioning Russia as the aggressor in Ukraine and creating anti-Western alliance with China. And, you know, as you mentioned, Putin's a great diplomat. I think Putin sees through this. He knows this. But he kind of has to play along. It's a charade. No, he kind of pretends like he doesn't. And you can kind of tell Rose kind of seemed out of place. As I saw the reactions in the crowd, you know, everyone seemed to support Russia and Putin. And, you know, authors such as yourself, you have the freedom to be less diplomatic and pretty much tell it like it is. And people like Paul Craig Roberts. And people like Paul Craig Roberts often say the Russians and the Chinese need to be more blunt and outspoken. So what are your thoughts? You know, how do you view this charade and that people like Putin must participate in? Should the Russians and the Chinese, should they just be more blunt or Putin, I mean, obviously has to balance a little bit.
I think very important is that Putin engages people like Charlie Rose because it's important that Russia gets the message to the vast majority of the world, including in the United States and in Europe, that this neoconservative war agenda in Washington from the Obama administration, the Bush administration before that, the Clinton administration before that, and Father Bush before that, this war agenda is a no-go. It's a no-brainer. It doesn't bring anything to mankind or to peace and so forth. And to force democracy down the throat with a AK-40 with a Abrams tank or a F-16 fighter jet is not the way for humankind to go forward. And I think it was very useful if it had been all friendly questions from some fan of Putin, who is a Western journalist, it wouldn't have had the same effect, because this gave Putin the opportunity to answer the critics. And imagine we're aiming for a whole audience out there that has many of these questions, because they are influenced by the Western mainstream media, CNN, CBS, the Charlie Rose station, Bloomberg, public broadcasting, or BBC. And therefore, I think it was very useful. And what it showed was that Putin was not rattled at all. He was relaxed. You know, his legs were spread, his arms were on the armchair. And at one point he said, you're a very American moderator. And he laughed, because Charlie Rose was asking these very silly, you know, propaganda questions, and Putin could laugh at him in a very human way. And that was beautiful. That deflated Charlie Rose's power to make Putin uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Or Russia.
Yeah, it was a very interesting hour, and I recommend people check that out.
Yes.
And so perhaps what are some of your other thoughts as an addendum to your article, what you took away from St. Petersburg, what you learned there?
Well, Russia has gone through unbelievable tribulations in its history, I think, over the last 1,000 years. It's gone through unbelievable tribulations from the onset of Lenin and communism in 1917, financed by the West, by the way, financed by the German General Staff initially, and then taken over by Wall Street and the City of London banks. However that developed, it was a trauma for the Russian people. The Tsar Nicholas, the last Tsar, Nicholas II, had instituted reforms that were among some of the most advanced ideas of any state in Europe, in Germany or England or whatever. And he was assassinated, he was driven out by the Russian Revolution and later killed. But they were building railways to link all of Russia, the Trans-Siberian Railway, Count Serjevita and so forth. They were making fundamental reform of agriculture. So the idea that the Tsardom, the Bolshevik idea that the Tsardom was this oppressive, absolutely brutal, kind of a fascist dictatorship, was utter nonsense. Nicholas got tricked by the British into certain alliances against Germany, its natural ally, and that created World War I and later World War II. The Russian people today, and I've been to Russia many, many times in the last years, and I saw it after the sanctions in the deepest hour of crisis in the beginning of January this year. And what I saw on the streets of St. Petersburg with friends were people who were warm, friendly. It was obvious that I was an American because I can't speak Russian. And they were only outstretched arms to help me. I'm in a wheelchair at the moment, and to be kind, normal human beings. So this was not a nation of frothing beasts like you see in Kiev and Western Ukraine and so forth with the neo-Nazis that are supported by Victoria Nuland and the U.S. State Department and Obama. So I think Russia is discovering through the crisis, ironically or not, the crisis is making Russians feel good about themselves for the first time, maybe in 1,000 years, maybe since the Great Schism of the Church, East and West, the Christian Church, but at least since the 1917. And that feeling good about themselves, Putin and the people around Putin are picking up on that energy and are growing. Putin is growing in his, it's clear to see. He is not this bitter ex-KGB head. He is a leader of his people with 89% popularity. Mm-hmm. No politician in the West, these fake politicians that we have, Hollande in France, Merkel in Germany, Obama in the United States, and so they're all pulled with puppet strings and so forth, you know, and if they step out of line, they're knocked out of the game by these various oligarchs. You know, the world is moving beyond this. I think more and more people are fed up and sick and tired of their silly wars and their silly games to try to control and destroy and so forth. They want to live like decent human beings in peace. And that is what Russia, China, the BRICS, and these other combinations I mentioned are moving toward. And I find that's one of the most beautiful things in my lifetime that I've ever seen.
And it's interesting because you mentioned the East is rising. We see it in the explosion of new media. You know, Russia Today, Sputnik News, Iranian Press TV, Chinese media, and so on. If we use gold as a symbol, you know, the economic power is rapidly shifting to the East. And, you know, I travel around Mexico here where I live, and I see Chinese all over the place speaking Spanish.
Really?
We just went to the beach, and the first place we stopped to have lunch next to us were a Chinese family eating and then ordering in Spanish. So
beautiful.
It's a sign, I think, that we see, you know, a generation ago, I'm a Croatian American, and so we would see American foreigners abroad all over the place speaking English, and now we see the Chinese, and power shifting to the East, and being under Western hegemony, you know, for the last number of decades, it was kind of challenging to speak our minds. You know, I've had trouble being in the Western hemisphere in an educational institution, being critical. But now I'm no longer very afraid, and I see other people that aren't as afraid because, you know, the power is shifting eastward, and if something happens, I'll just go east, you can do very well. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yes, I do. But it's this is the future of mankind. This is, I think, as these trends continue over the next 2 to 3 years, especially Russia for the rest of the world, will be viewed in the same light America was perhaps in 1950 or even 100 years ago, the beacon of hope for mankind. And this is not sycophantish from my side. It's just simply that they are extremely intelligent, extremely sensitive people. I know them rather well. And since 1994, I've been going to Russia. And not at all the image that's portrayed in the Western CIA propaganda media, CNN, blah, 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 blah. And they are now feeling that about themselves for the first time. If you watched, I wrote an article, it's posted on my website, Why I Wept at the Moscow Parade, May 9, the 70th anniversary of the victory over fascism in Germany. And this, the Obama administration made a disgraceful attempt to slander and smear and attack. And on the contrary, the parade was one of the most powerful, moving demonstrations for the entire world that there's hope. Because you had not only the military hardware, bleeding edge new technologies, not cutting edge, which is advanced, state of the art is what exists off the shelf. Bleeding edge is 10 leaps into the future compared with everybody else. They demonstrated that technology, but the heart of the demonstration was the march of the immortal battalion of the families who lost someone in the Second World War. And they held pictures of that lost relative or relatives. And there were 600,000 peacefully marching with such joy and good feeling on their face, it made me weep. And then I reflected on, why am I weeping? Number one, for the joy, because I feel this energy. Number two, I'm weeping because I cannot imagine today in my own native land, the United States of America, any such human demonstration in a positive sense. Americans have been so destroyed and so beaten over and manipulated dumbed down by everything imaginable from these oligarchs over the last 40 years, 35, 40 years, it was unimaginable. And this gives me enormous hope, because this was not a sycophantic, war fury that Putin was arousing in his people. It was one of the most beautiful human events I've ever witnessed.
And I believe, I believe it was organic too. I read that a lot of people there in Russia, they just went to the streets spontaneously.
Yes, yes. I have a friend who's in Rostov, and she said the same thing. That they were so moved by the energy, the positive energy, that they just and it went right into the Kremlin. You know, it's like going into the White House, but the White House is surrounded with concrete, barbed wire, machine guns, and so forth.
And free speech zones.
Free speech zones. So, I mean, this tells a lot. Putin, the president of Russia, the most critical man in the world right now, in a certain sense, was walking. He had three or four bodyguards that you could see around him, but and not in a shielded limousine like the Pope Mobile or some of these things, but he was walking on the street with 600,000 Russians. That shows you something.
And finally, to close up, I've noticed that it seems you've exclusively been publishing articles at the New Eastern Outlook website. Can you tell us about that?
This is a website that came in contact with me some while ago and asked me to write for them. And I said, okay, let's try it out. Let's test the waters. And they had an appreciation of what I was communicating in my words, in my articles and so forth, that I had found in virtually no English language website up until then. And so I told them I would be happy to work through you exclusively and to help build up, because I think you're doing important work. Mm-hmm. And I know the people personally, and they're people of great integrity, morally and intellectually. So it's a very happy combination. Mm-hmm. I could, I could write for many other websites and send that out, but I made a conscious choice to support the NEO, New Eastern Outlook, and use that as my platform.
Okay, that's great. And finally, I always ask my guests this question, because it's one of the focus of my podcast, because I work in education, and I feel the need to expose students to critical information such as your work. And it seems we have a bit of a lost generation that tends to spend a lot of time on entertainment and trivial things. But I want to see, there's always a critical few. I want to see a hero generation, as described in the book, The Fourth Turning. A hero generation rise up and carry the torch, and one that is more serious and understands the troubled times that we are in. So what final words of wisdom would you leave this next generation, anyone to the age of 30, high school, university, graduate people, what words of wisdom would you give them in terms of studying and just critical thinking, I guess?
I would say, and I've thought a lot about this, focus not on fear and all the bad people who do bad things. Focus on the good, on being good, in every deep sense of that word, and focus on love and being love, in a true sense of love, and being human beings. And if we do that, everything else will fall to the wayside. All these video games and blah, 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 these amusements that are bred in circuses designed by the oligarchs that want to treat us like vassals. But I'm very optimistic right now. I'll be honest with you. In the last 2 years, I've seen a sea change in the world in terms of moving away. The games of these people, the Rockefeller, Gates, Bushes, and so forth, Clinton's, they're not working. They don't have, they've lost the baraka. Mm-hmm. They've mm-hmm. lost the power. They're losing it dramatically day by day. And they're scared to death. They don't, they try not to show it. But look at this insanity or this silliness. Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe and Eastern Europe, makes this coup d'etat in Ukraine and says the European Union and doesn't, you know, just lets that happen. These are a bunch of thugs, mm-hmm. a bunch of cultural imbeciles or idiots who are now in dominant positions in Washington. And the world is, I think, a little bit more advanced from their games. Mm-hmm. So whereas it might have worked in 2002, 2003 under George W. Bush and this snarling Dick Cheney, it's not working anymore. And that's the fascinating thing. It's a beautiful time to be alive.
Yeah, I always tell my students, grab some popcorn and soda or something more cleaner, alternative water, and enjoy the show. Yeah, so okay. We'll keep enjoying the show and following your work. I hope people support you at williamengdahl.com. All of your books are essential for people to truly understand how the world works. And well, thank you for your time, William. And
thank you. It's good to see you again.
Good night and all the best.
Yeah, thank you.